Just a little bit of a keynote here for you this morning. Just a reminder that tonight, a reminder that our goal here is to build faith in the kids. So a child can be a good kid, nice, well-mannered, sweet spirit, of course, and he can still have no faith. And so we might have, that's not even half the job to get him there. We want to, you know, it's just a tiny part. To make them a good citizen, the real goal is to make them help them discover their own faith. And the kids here, at least the high school kids that we interact with pretty often, are very familiar with that goal. If I ask them, they'll say, "Hey, we got welcome to New Hope. Your parenting thing has just taken another job.
More need for help, less knowledge. Yeah.
More kids you have, the less you know." Anyway, so as Hebrews 11:6 says, without faith it is impossible to please him. So let's not forget that is our goal. And to do that, we've got to take some steps. And the first is to remind them to be obedient. Titus 3:1, he's talking to Titus about what you tell adults to be. Remind them to be submissive to rulers and authorities and to be obedient, to be ready for every good work. Of course, the idea of obedience runs throughout the Bible. I mean, from top to bottom, from beginning to end. The very first sin was a lack of obedience, obviously, to one law. And it's just amazing when we consider the ease at which we can be disobedient. And of course, if that's true of us, it's true of our kids. So we have to teach them obedience. And then we need to teach them self-control. Kind of what stuff we talked about on Sunday somewhat. I've always liked this proverb. I mean, it's a challenging one. It says a man or a person without self-control is like a city broken into and left without walls. What does that mean? Why is that? What's the analogy there? Okay.
When I try to reason with my kids as much as possible, and when like Major's been having a little bit of difficulty, a little bit of anger, and I try to explain to him that the problem is people are going to be able to control you. Because they'll know that if I do such and such, he's going to fly off the handle. They could do that for game. They could do that just to watch you go crazy. But the point is, you are without control, so you're at the mercy of everyone else. Like a city, because back then, the walls were the only protection.
Okay, yeah. Very important, have those walls. Nehemiah went all the way back to Jerusalem to build them, remember. So, there's no control. They're left, they're vulnerable to all kinds of things if they have self-control. Especially to temptation and all that, of course. So it's kind of like, this is the idea, I think. And I have some arbitrary ages there, although I think we'd probably agree that by the time the kid gets into this age, he should be able to control himself for the most part. And if he doesn't, you probably have an issue. And this is a hopeful. Hey, I'm a grandfather now, and so there's a lot of stuff I forgot about raising kids. So I just put whatever numbers in here you want, or the future, you know, if it's 22 or 23, whatever. This is totally arbitrary. I'm not an expert on that. The point is, though, is that. And it says a hopeful chart, I think. If you do the work, then theoretically your need to control the child will obviously decrease as his increases. So you won't have to be on to that person all the time. And this varies wildly. I mean, all joking aside, the age varies wildly. But some kids are 3 or 4, they just, you know, it's a temperament thing to some degree, too, and sometimes. They're just not as rebellious. Which reminds me, I read a quote today that was kind of interesting. It's a book that was written by a psychologist who's talking about why our kids are less rebellious and more tolerant and not as happy. And it's a book about what, you think? Why are they like that today? Why are kids more less rebellious, more tolerant, and not as happy?
We think overindulgence.
Okay.
Well, they have less control over their own lives.
Okay.
Like, they do everything for them, so they don't feel that a lack of happiness comes from a lack of a sense of agency, but they're not discontent with the situation in terms of wanting to rebel because they kind of get there.
What's there to rebel against if you always get what you want? It's actually a book about screen time, about using phones and video games and TV, all this stuff that they do. That's what the book is actually about. And so they are so immersed in that you know, they're actually easier to control in some sense. And yet they're not as happy. And there's been a lot of studies done on this recently, of course, because it's been a problem for a while. And this particular psychologist lays a lot of blame there. And I'm sure all this other stuff contributes to it, of course. But I just thought that was interesting. So, you know, that the fact that the kid's sitting there playing a game doesn't necessarily mean he has developed self-control. He's just being entertained. And distracted, right? So we're trying to actually build self-control in the kid, and that's the goal. So that starts with discipline, and that brings us to what we want to talk about tonight. We've talked about discipline quite a bit. I don't know if you have this thing. I don't know if you do or not, but that's all right. These are those six methods that go back to Dobson and Betty Chase when they put their stuff together. So they're pretty old, but I think they've been tested, time-tested, and the thing I like about this is we can look at this and be very specific about how to discipline our children. It's not all one thing. My dad knew one thing. My mom knew one thing. The only thing they differed on was the means of punishment. Basically, it was a spanking, though. That was it. There wasn't even any grounding in my day. They didn't even ground you. They didn't bother with that. What's the good thing about a spanking, though? I mean, just, I don't know how you feel about spanking to start with, but what's actually a good thing about it, perhaps from the kid's standpoint?
I will take that any day of the week, over being grounded or other methods. I figured that out at some point.
Yeah.
Because I kind of realized, I can take that. I'll do that. Now, it's traumatic, and my parents are upset. I never like to see my parents be upset. So there is some kind of an emotional thing that's going on there that doesn't feel good or feel right. But there is a point at which, and sad parents figured this out with me, that isn't affecting him anymore either. So the shelf life of that, that idea that you're getting away with something because you just got to be thinking for it, doesn't last very long.
Yeah, it's a catharsis, right? Sort of. You just got this. This okay? I did my time, right? And so there is a little bit of relief in that. Everybody's, you know, drawn the line. They did the thing, and it's over with. My son used to tell Angie, take the spanking. What's wrong with you? Just get spanked. But she didn't like it because it was a dignity thing for her, you know. The spanking for Dave lasted about, well, we could measure that in the hours probably. Whereas for Angie, it would last a good week or 10 days. I mean, she'd get a lot of mileage out of that, at least. Sometimes for a month. I mean, sometimes she just never wanted any part of that again. So that is on the list. This is very 1990. I guess this list, but the other things come first, and so we want to go over these. They're on the same thing there. So let's just go through these. Number one, communication. Why is that? How is that a method of discipline? Communication, and why is it important?
Well, if you take the, I think, discipline, I think disciple, follower, we want the child to follow a path. You can't expect the child to follow the path if the path isn't clear.
Right.
So that's sort of the first rule, is laying out, this is what's acceptable, this is the expectation, and this is what's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, Lisa.
Also, with communication, you could get to them before the true meltdown happens. And so if you really can watch that, that will help.
Might be able to short-circuit the bad behavior. Rich?
I think the goal in discipline here, at least the short-term goal, is behavior modification and learning. And they're verbal at a certain age, and they're rational, so talking to them, kind of, you have to be talking to them no matter what, even when you're spanking, you have to be talking about what you're doing.
Yeah.
So, ideally, once they get to a certain age, we talk about their decisions when they're a teenager, and these other things aren't really even involved, but you're still talking to them and helping them learn self-discipline and change their behavior.
Yeah, very good. Yeah. Yes.
And rarely you might have a kid where you say, oh no, don't do that.
Yeah,
so you don't have to do anything else.
Right. You give a verbal warning, right? Isn't that like Deuteronomy? Aren't we talking about Deuteronomy here? If you study Deuteronomy, I mean, what it is instruction, and here's what happens if you don't, right? And of course, when they didn't, that happened to them. The consequences came because they didn't. But it's laying out, it's giving them an opportunity to understand what they're supposed to be doing, or training. That's real discipline, actually, is training them ahead of time, informing them of the consequences for certain kinds of behavior. And it is behavior modification. There's nothing wrong with that. We were just, I think, Sunday we were talking about the fact that the whole behavior modification is not the whole enchilada, right? That's not all we're... Because that kind of maybe get the nice kids who are good-mannered and all that, but they don't have faith, and if that's true, then that's an issue, then we've not done the job. I thought of Deuteronomy 28, where that's really laid out. He gives the blessings and curses in Deuteronomy 28. This is what happens if you do what I say, this is what happens if you don't. So we communicate beforehand, and then sometimes that goes to actually instruction, and sometimes it works. If there's a fear of the Lord in them, or fear of the father, fear of the mother, or stuff. Okay, that's not too hard. The second one is reinforcement. This is positive reinforcement. So what are we talking about here? This is a form of discipline. These are things I knew nothing about when I was raising my kids. I think I knew I was supposed to talk to them, but didn't know much of this other stuff. We did it naturally. We just did all these things naturally. We just, just instinctively we did it. Not.
We did.
Well, at least some of it. So what is reinforcement? Positive reinforcement. Why is that a form of discipline?
Well, on one hand, they always say, if you tell a kid that they're bad enough, they're going to believe it, and that's how they're going to act, because that's how they believe they are. So you would think the reverse is true. If you tell them that they're good when they're being good, there's a decent chance then they're going to think they are, and then they're going to want to act in a good way and feel good about doing right.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's not no difficult, is it? Randy?
Quick story. I read before one of the junior high school classes about a substitute teacher who came in and had to teach long-term. The original teacher was sick most of the year, and when she came in, she was given a list of all the kids, and there were numbers written by all of the kids, and they were high numbers, 120, 125, 122, and so she taught them as if these kids were really smart. She assumed that they were, the IQs were something like that of the children, so she talked to them as if they were capable. At the end of the year, the kids performed beyond anything they had ever done before, and the administrators came to the substitute and said, how did you get these kids to perform so well? These are the most troubled kids in the school. She just looked at the administrator and said, what are you talking about? They're the brightest kids in the school. Look at their IQ scores.
Yeah.
She simply taught them as if she expected them to perform, and they believed in themselves.
Was it? Locker numbers, right?
Yeah, it turned out they were locker numbers.
Oh, how funny. But that's so important. Most of the dad told me, he was a teacher for a long time, and said he never looked at the records of the kid, you know, as they came into his class, because he didn't want to know bad or good. You just want to treat them at a certain level to start with. And I think that always stuck with me. I thought, that's a good idea, you know. Because we do. We immediately start pigeonholing. We do this all the time. This is another issue. Getting started on this. Labeling people, categorizing it, people, putting them in boxes. And we do that because it makes us more comfortable, I think. And kids do it. They're really bad at that, you know, based upon the kind of clothes they wear and stuff like that. But we should just treat everybody the same, and then when they do something well, then praise them for it. We all appreciate that when it happens to us. No matter how old you get.
Yeah, and also so along with reinforcement, even when they do something that is not good and is bad, I think it's also important to remind them that they are still a good person. They have a good heart, but their actions are not, you know, what's the word?
Proper?
Not proper.
Appropriate.
I was going to say not reflective of
yeah.
the good nature that they are.
Yeah.
Right.
No, good point.
That's why I remember hearing somebody tell me, you don't ever tell the kid they're a good kid or a bad kid. You always say that job was performed well, or you did a good job on that, or you could do that job better, because then it sticks with them like they're a bad kid or they're a good kid, instead of what they've done is not appropriate, or their job that they've completed is a good job.
Yeah, those two categories are wildly wildly broad or something.
I have a question while we're talking about the message we're sending our kids when we correct them. Mm-hmm. We didn't get to it on Sunday on the last point you had on lesson seven.
Mm-hmm.
It said, whenever possible, every act of discipline should be done in the Lord. Our aim is to please God first and foremost, i.e. not, I don't like it when you do that, or this hurts mommy. And I totally agree with that, but I have noticed with my kids, like, I have to be really careful, it seems, to, like, if I am correcting them, to bring up the Lord, because then they get really, like, afraid of him in a
kind of,
you know what I mean? They're really young, so that's maybe part of it.
Yeah.
But, like, one time we were praying, and one of them was kind of messing around during the prayer, and we said something like, you know, God's not pleased when we're doing that, when we're praying, we should be, you know, thinking about him and being honoring him. And he said, does God not love me anymore? Does God love, you know, that sort of thing. And so I just guess I need some advice on how to bring our faith into correction without making them feel like an undue feeling of fear.
Right.
You know?
That's good. I'd say that, number one, if possible, and there's a pathetic there. Number two, you kind of said it. I think it's designed more for older kids who can kind of understand the concept. That's a good correction on that, because, you know, a lot of times you hear parents just make it all about what they don't like, and that the point of that is to make sure that they're getting instruction from God. I think that helps build their faith, if done right, but not too early, I think, especially if it's something negative. Now you can say God likes this or that, or the positive side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Jack had a comment, I'm sorry.
Something maybe to keep in mind, and I kind of know this from experience, is that if all you do is discipline your kids and point out when they're doing things wrong, then they're going to hear the positive parts from other people.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just going to equate, you know, mom and dad are all about the rules and I'm in trouble all the time. And then, of course, they might be prone to follow along whoever else or whatever. And, I mean, I don't know, but that could lead to something where the kid, you know, grows up in the church the whole time and then gets into college or something. And all of a sudden, you know, he's exposed to these people, a good job and this kind of stuff and all that. And it can go sideways.
Yeah. Have you ever sat and listened to a sermon or been in a class where the conversation is about law versus grace, you know, all that can get very heavy and theological and all that? You ever think about putting that in parental terms? That the problems with the law for us, for is the same thing as with the kids. You, if it's all about the law and all about, you know, behavior, this and maybe that, as important as that is, and as important as it was to God, there were 613 commandments in the old law. It's not, and if there's no grace ever, if that's not what they're, at least what they're thinking, they're going to miss a big part of what they're supposed to be about and what they're supposed to be doing. And so I say that to plug the next time you hear a sermon like or a class like that, think about it in parental terms. You know, we should, I think, because I think there's a point there. Christine?
I was thinking about what Stacy asked, and I'm wondering if when we are disciplining our children, if we use that I'm being obedient to God when I discipline you because God wants me to raise you to be faithful. And so maybe we could say, I'm being obedient and I'm listening to what God wants me to do. So if I'm doing what God wants me to do, then I can do the disciplining of you so that you will love God when you grow up.
Yeah, that's good. And you can always add that God wants us to do well because he loves us. And yeah. You can always add that.
And you can always ask for forgiveness. Just like I'll always forgive you, God will always forgive us.
Right. And I think that's good if we model that, if we make a mistake.
Except for Rachel Lawrence. She told her mother, she said, "When after you spank me, I don't want you to hug me or kiss me."
That was Katie, wasn't it?
Yes, it was Katie. It was Katie. I remember Katie. Because that just irked her.
Do not hug me. You don't.
After you spanked.
I don't know what a character she was. She had a point there, right? Okay, so we understand. It isn't all about the law. It's about grace as well and praise and all that kind of thing. So do that when you can as much as possible. I don't think you can overdo it if it's valid, if it's based upon something they did that was right or good.
This one kind of big picture view of it, bribery is okay too. I mean, God offers us heaven.
Those were two really just these statements were really far apart, but I got the point. Yeah, bribery and God, you know, God bribes us. That's shorthand to that. Well, that's true. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. No, I don't think. At least when, I mean, some people say, I've heard people say, well, we're not supposed to be doing this to get to heaven. We shouldn't talk about that stuff. I think, well, that's crazy. Usually they say, we're not just doing it for the reward. I'm like, what's the opposite of the reward? I don't understand that argument. Maybe somebody's heard it before, but can fill me in. But by the way, when I meant to say this at the beginning, when we're doing this discipline thing, and then we have obviously have children here happening all the time, it's a daily thing in a way. Communication is it's an ongoing thing, and then there are moments that, like, we call them teaching moments in a classroom, right? There are momentous times in the child's life where you have a chance to make a really big point with that child, if you'll just be strong enough to do it. And that can be, Angie, she's not here tonight, so I can talk. Angie mentioned on, was it Sunday, where she mentioned the incident in the store. I mean, that basket was chock full of stuff because it was very cheap, and we were just doing it. And she was just picking stuff out. And then she got snotty. She's 15 years old, I think, maybe, 15, 14 or 15. And,
old enough to know better.
Old enough to know better, by far. And we just, I just said, come on, let's walk. And we walked out. I remember it was a big old basement full of clothes. And we just walked out. Well, she brought it up, and she's brought it up several times. It was I'm not patting myself on the back. I was mad. I was just upset with her. At the moment, that was my moment.
I had stuff in the basket.
Yeah, she's never let go of that.
I don't think I had anything in the basket. I wasn't risking anything. But I forgot about that part of it. But But anyway, those moments happen, and you kind of try to seize those things because they do remember them. Because those things, Christy one time, this was Angie too, she, and Angie's stories are a lot less than our son's, so, but she we gave her some money. She gave her some money for some little trip they were going on, and she looked at me and said, is that all? And Christy took it away. Off you go. So those are moments, I think. They do remember those. I think I mentioned my dad's look one time after I did something I shouldn't have. I think he stayed out too long or something. I don't know what it was. But anyway, it was just a look. And when he was always very a proactive punisher, and just the look just stuck with me like forever. I said, I don't want to ever see that again. I didn't want that.
Jesus looking at Peter.
Yeah, it was like Jesus looking at Peter. Imagine, you know, it was just the fact that he was just disappointed and didn't take any kind of physical or mental action other than that. Psalm 32:8 says, I will instruct you, I will counsel you with my eye. And you know, it's like that eye you get from your dad, or mainly, it seems like mainly falls on dads, right? They give you that eye across the room and you, okay, you know. So those are all forms of communication that work. At least they did on me. Okay, the next two are interesting. These are the things that I know I didn't know by name, at least when we were raising our kids. And so anytime we did either one of these two things, natural consequences or logical consequences, it was just because we lucked out. Natural consequences is really a parent saver, because you just don't do anything. You let them take the heat for whatever they do. And obviously, we're not talking about, I sit down here, I'm talking about playing with fire, running on the railroad tracks, stuff like that, obviously. But give me an example. So some of you have used these things. Give me an example. Ready?
As my own, I left my bicycle out in the front yard overnight, and it wasn't there in the morning.
Yeah.
I didn't get another bike.
Right. Yeah. What do a lot of parents do? Immediately they go down, well, okay, maybe they're blustery, and then they go down and buy them another bike the next day. You know, that there's no teaching value in that, doing that. You at least make them wait for a lengthy time, or make them earn it somehow, right? That's natural, though. This is what happens when you're an adult. You know, if you think you leave your stuff laying around, people are going to pick it up. What else?
I remember when I was 16, I got my license, and 2 weeks later, I was out driving my dad's truck, and way too fast, kind of just hot riding down those old country roads. Fishtailed, rolled the truck. It probably should have killed myself and my sister and my girlfriend at the time, but totaled the truck completely. And I remember riding home with this good Samaritan that took us home, and thinking, I am so totally screwed for the rest of my life. I don't know what my dad's going to do, but it's going to be colossal. When I walk through that door, it's going to happen. And we got home, and I went inside, and I said, can we handle this in the back? So we walked back to the back. And I was waiting for it, and he said, I think that whatever has already happened, and certainly what is going to happen as fallout from what just occurred, is going to be enough of a lesson for you. And then he just walked out. And that really stuck with me, and it was huge, you know, in the months to come, about how what the ramifications of not having another vehicle and everything that I had to go through with that. Just because he said that, I started realizing that. So sometimes I think, let the natural consequences take their toll, but then let your kid know that there are going to be some natural consequences, so let's categorize those or look for those.
Yeah, yeah. That's a big one.
When they're like 16 or whatever, maybe.
Yeah. That was a big one. Serious one. I was thinking like when they don't take their lunch every day or something.
I still feel like he's going to drop the hammer on
it. He's holding that one over your head.
Keys, please. It belongs to me. Yeah. And I will give him the keys because I think he probably deserves.
Yeah. You didn't get the catharsis out of that one? You didn't get the spanking? I know. See, the spanking's better. Whatever. Just get it over with. Okay, what else? Anybody else got another one? I mentioned like lunches or their coats, stuff like little stuff like that. Where it, now, so I was talking about this once in a class about the lunch thing, but they keep forgetting their lunch, and mom runs it down there and takes it to them every day and all that. And somebody said, they don't, kids don't care because they'll feed them at school now. You know, they'll kind of go on to the, they don't want anybody to be hungry for even a day. So that probably doesn't work anymore at a lot of places, but their coat, they don't want to take their coat. They're in a hurry. They want to go out, and, you know, okay, so they get cold. You know, this stuff, this, it gets, use the rod will not kill them, the proverb says, and paraphrase. So that's a rod. That's a way of correcting them, and it's not going to kill them. If it is, of course, don't do it. But if it is, but it, just let things fall into place, and they'll learn from that. I love this quote from Hosea 4:17. Ephraim is joined to her idols, leave her alone. You know, it's kind of, that's, eventually God got to the point where he said, okay, they are dead set on going into idolatry. Let them bear the consequences of that. Eventually does that. Romans 1:24, 26, 28. God gave them over. He says that three times. He gave them over. Okay, you're going to do it. Go on. He's going to remove his restraint. And so that people learn through the natural consequences that come for their decisions. So it's really, really good. And it's and you haven't done anything. They can't even be mad at you. You know, in Brady's example, I mean, how can you get mad at him for that? You did everything. And he's allowing you to now work that all out for yourself. However it is, which is probably pretty tough, as he said. How about logical consequences? This one you have to do something. You have to prescribe something that is a consequence.
If we use Brady's example and just kind of change the story a little bit, it would be you get to buy a new truck for the family.
Yeah.
You know, that's your responsibility now. That would be illogical. It might be tough, particularly for a 16-year-old. But you know, something along those lines, where you think you broke it, you get it fixed.
Yeah, and that's a very simple one, right? I mean, it's simple in terms of defining. And then there's, you're going to work until you pay that off, or at some point.
I'm not sure where else it would go. So I think this is the figure out the kid's currency and make them pay. So it's not spanking, but it's very similar. Like, my kids like video games, so if they do something that is not okay, then you don't get to play video games for a week or whatever. I mean, so each kid has a currency. That one doesn't work with Vivian. She has other currency. But because otherwise I don't see where that fits in. That kind of thing doesn't seem to be in these other things. And it's not a natural consequence. It's me saying,
right,
you don't get this because you did it. And maybe grounding would be the same thing.
Right? Yeah, that's probably the broadest of all these in terms of what can go under there. One example for a small child would be if they write on the wall, let them clean the wall. Even if the wall never gets clean, but make them scrub it for 30 minutes or something, you know, just so they get to understand this is what happens when you write on the wall. A lot of these are probably more applicable to small kids in terms of at least this one. I think you find something. The idea here is find something that's kind of similar that goes along with what they did, but other things come under that. Everybody see that? So you have to be creative, a little more creative with that one in terms of how it plays out. Heather?
I remember one thing, Michaela and Allison were young, but in school. So Mackenzie was a baby, so it was probably kindergarten, first grade, second grade, kind of. So they still shared a room, and they had a lot of clothes. And they were having trouble keeping the clothes, like, in the drawers. And so they couldn't seem to manage what they had. So while we were at school, they were at school one day, I bagged up all their clothes. Except for like two shirts, two shorts,
in a pair of PJs, and those consequences were, you've shown that you can't handle as much stuff as you have, so we're going to give you a way to manage. So this is what you have right now. It's very little. If you can manage that, you can earn some of your clothes back. So a piece at a time, they could earn something back until they started to get a better handle on that. Now, did that work forever? No, but that was one of those things that for them, I think they still remember that.
I can tell she still remembers it.
Yeah, because that was the worst day ever. I was like, where are my clothes?
We did something similar with Angie, so, but I'm picking on Angie.
Okay.
Well, the thing about these that I like about these is that we go back and forth with kids on so many different things, and if you can figure out something, it just shortens the conflict. I mean, they're not going to like it, and they're going to be, but you've kind of taken care of it.
They might go to the next one, but you don't send your kid to his room when he has every convenience in his room, games and, you know, TV or whatever. That's not the consequence that you would send him. So it has to be something that hurts.
Yes.
It can't be a throw me into the briar patch thing.
How many know what throw me into the briar patch means?
Splash mountain.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the 22nd on Splash Mountain. Oh, okay.
What? Is it Disneyland?
Yeah. Oh. I got you.
Is it
Peter Rabbit? Peter Rabbit. Brer Rabbit. It's from a movie that's been outlawed.
That was a book.
Book or movie. So, Song of the South is the movie. Song of the South. Yeah, it came from a book. I forgot the name of the book. But I don't remember the
name. My parents used to read it.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. Okay, well.
What does it mean?
Well, Christy said, don't put your kid, don't say, send your kid to his room when he's got every kind of luxury.
Because that's what Br'er Rabbit wanted.
He wanted to be in the Briar Patch. That's where he lived. That was his fun
place. Reverse
psychology.
Don't make me do this thing.
Yeah.
So he really wants to do
whatever
it.
You do, don't put me in my room.
Okay.
Yeah. And then they're in there, you know, to get everything. I just was reading an article today about some kid. They said this kid's bored, and he has more luxuries than royalty 100 years ago, which is actually true. He has more stuff in his room than a king had 100 years ago, whatever they said. And there, I thought that was kind of interesting.
You can't say I'm bored either.
What?
Never say you're bored.
Oh, I know, that's...
They didn't. That's the toilet wand.
Your kid says that one time. What do you do when your kid says, I'm bored, Mom. I'm bored, Dad. What do you do? He says it one time.
There's a yard full of weeds out there.
M-G-W-D.
No. I'll give you something to do. That's all you have to say. And there's plenty of stuff to do. So... Okay, number five. I'm going to get through. I'm determined to get through this list. Number five is extinction. So, do you remember what Mark Twain said about? You guys remember the Mark Twain quote? Okay, when the kid is 15, put him in a barrel, and cut a little hole in the top. When they're 18, plug the hole. That's not what this is talking about. this is just, okay, so when do you ignore their behavior? Because that's what this is. Extinction is, you extinguish it by ignoring it. What? Give me the best example. Just stop and think. Okay.
Well, when it's clearly attention-seeking, when it's trying to get attention in a negative way.
Okay. And so let's say that a little girl is sitting at your table, and you give her, everybody's eating some form of beans, some kind of beans, and you put the beans down in front of her just like everybody else is eating, and she goes absolutely ballistic, and how much she hates beans, and screams, and just throws the biggest fit I get. I want beans, and beans. What do you do with that little girl? She's screaming, she's just inconsolable. She's like two and a half.
Give her more beans.
Fuel on the fire. I told you, do more. Eat more beans. That was actually Belinda did that. At our house, Belinda did that. She absolutely freaked out because we put beans in front of her. And so we finally just put her in the bedroom. She said, well, go in there and shut the door. And she went in there and just went on and on crying. And Natalie's sitting there and she goes, I'll go help her, you know. And she runs in there and talks to her. And she's still screaming when Natalie comes out. So eventually, what else are you going to do? You know, you just, when they're throwing a fit, you don't need to sit there and watch it. You just let them go finish up. And since it's an attention-getting thing, I mean, I'm not sure it was in her case. I think there's some traumatic experience with beans or something. I don't know what it was. Give her the benefit of the doubt. But
what we used to do with Luke is, if he was doing that, you know, after a while, just say, why don't you go to another room? And when you're ready, when you've gotten this out of your system, you can come back.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. Either tell them to go and they go them on their own, or you carry them in there, and, you know, one of those things. So,
Rachel, when she was 4, she was running through the house, and I told her to stop running, and then she ran into something and came crying to me with her hand, in my estimation, fake crying, and I went, don't run in the house. Go clean out the dishwasher. So she did. She kind of cleaned it up after a long time.
Broken wrist, huh?
Yeah.
Well, on that note...